First, the release read. He will be responsible for 3 operating divisions of the company. His leadership abilities will augment those of Sandy Litvak, our Chief of Corporate Operations, and Steve Bollenbach, our Chief Financial Officer, who were so instrumental in making the Capital Cities ABC merger. Both will continue to report to me. When Ovitz got home that night, he looked stricken. What's the matter? Judy asked. I just made the biggest mistake of my career, Ovitz said, echoing Eisner's own words to Tony Schwartz. He explained what had just happened. We'll do the best we can do, she said. You can make it work. Ovitz called his lawyer, Ron Olson, to report on the disastrous evening and to see if Eisner had already breached their agreement. They concluded that Ovitz had no choice but to go forward. He'd built Hollywood's most powerful agency from nothing, largely through sheer determination and hard work. He would not and could not fail at Disney. Ovitz's hiring as Disney president was announced on August 14th to widespread acclaim. Ovitz pick ideal choice for global giant, read the Los Angeles Times headline. Walt Disney Company has reached out for the kind of powerful, globally connected executive needed to run the biggest of the new breed of giant entertainment and media complexes, the article gushed. Only that morning did Irwin Russell tell Ignacio Lozano, the 4th member of Disney's compensation committee, that Ovitz was being hired as president. And Lozano didn't recall that any terms were mentioned. That same morning, Ovitz and Eisner signed copies of a letter memorializing the terms of his employment, a 5-year contract with an annual base salary of $1 million, a discretionary bonus of at least an additional $1.5 million, and options to purchase 5 million Disney shares. Ovitz arrived for work at Disney just after Labor Day. He had expected to occupy Frank Wells's former office, next to Eisner on the 6th floor of the Team Disney building, but Sandy Litvak had already moved in. Why doesn't Sandy move? Ovitz asked, but Eisner dismissed the idea. Bollenbach, the CFO, and Larry Murphy, head of strategic planning, also had offices on 6. Of the various division heads, only Joe Roth had an office on the same floor with Eisner. The others were on 5. Ovitz moved into a small office next to Dennis Hightower, who was running television. Eisner told Ovitz that an office on 6 was being renovated, and he could move in when it was finished. Still, Ovitz's presence on 5 was a signal of his diminished status. At one point, Ovitz suggested building a staircase between floors 5 and 6 so that he and the division heads would have easier access to Eisner and the other top executives. Eisner looked at him like he was crazy. It was a waste of money, he said. And besides, he'd deliberately designed the building so as to prevent easy access to his office. One of the first things that greeted Ovitz after his arrival was a copy of a newsletter from Roy Disney to all the animators, noting that Peter Schneider, who ran feature animation, would report directly to Roy and Eisner, not Ovitz. This, too, came as a shock to Ovitz, another painful reminder of his ever-diminishing status. The following Monday, Ovitz attended the first of Eisner's weekly staff lunches, which Eisner had often told him was the focal point of his management of the company, extolling the